Excuse me. Go ahead, Bradley.
Just tell me when you're ready, Steve. Good morning, everyone. It's about 10:32, June 29th, 2017. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of North Dakota Public Service Commission. I call this informal hearing of the Public Service Commission to order. This is case number PU-17-196 regarding MDU and excess control valves. With me today is Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Crotchis, as well as from our staff, Sarah Caldwell, Victor Shook, Stacy Eberl. I thought I seen Craig Greeman in the room.
At the table.
No! I thought you were going that way. And Steve Call. I would ask the company to have the people who intend to speak identify themselves for the record, please.
Good morning, Commissioners. Tammy Eberle, Director of Regulatory Affairs with Montana Dakota.
And Josh Sanders, Manager of Standards and Compliance with Montana Dakota Utilities.
I would also, for the record, indicate there are three other MDU people here, as well as Dave Cedarquist from NSP. This is an informal hearing, an opportunity for us to gather information upon which to base a decision. But if it gets into information that is in dispute, we would have to cease the informal hearing and go to a formal hearing. With me, as I mentioned today, is Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Crotchis, whose portfolio it is. I do not have any opening comments. Do you?
Sure, just a couple. I think the idea behind getting together today isn't that this is some controversial request or application, because it's pretty straightforward in my opinion. But I've, on separate from the work directly here, been involved in NARUC and GTI, the Gas Technology Institute, and have heard some presentations on these excess flow valves. And I think it's a potential area of confusion for consumers, and it because it is for me. And so my goal is to get more information today, and I appreciate you guys putting together this so that we can do a better job of helping you inform the public about what these are and what benefits they might have, and all of those types of questions, because it is a new thing and a new requirement. And I think that from what I understand, there are cases where this can be helpful, but there's probably instances where it's not a real good use of a consumer's money. So that's what I just hope that we can better understand. So thank you. And the same applies, NSP. We'll be doing the same thing. I don't know the approach or how NSP is going about it yet, and we don't have a tariff filing. But the idea would be to we'll help get this information out to all gas consumers and not just MDU. So we aren't just picking on MDU or ignoring NSP with our meeting today. So thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Crotchis, it's your portfolio. Thank
you. Good morning. So, yeah, I will be interested in hearing, just getting some more background on this. And as mentioned, this is in order to comply with the federal pipeline safety regulations that the final rule, I believe, has been recently issued on this. A couple of the questions I will have, one will be, how long have you already been doing this for new lines going in anticipation of the fact that the final rule would be in place? And how many customers then remain that would be would have the opportunity, if they so choose, to put these valves in? So that would be a couple of the questions I will have that I'm assuming will be answered during the course of our discussion. And then one other point I do want to make is that we will have to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing at our next commission meeting regarding this. So that will take place at our next commission meeting, and then we will take that from there. But, you know, with that, I think I'm going to turn it over. I know Victor Shook is with us, Sarah, as well. And I know Victor has a couple of questions that he will be bouncing off of you. So I've just put you on the spot, Victor. So hopefully you at least have one. So think of something. But with that, yeah, we can get started.
All right. Well, good morning again, and thank you. Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota. As Josh Sanders introduced himself, he's a manager of standards and compliance with our gas distribution group. Josh is going to walk through the background on the EFVs, the rule, and how they work. And we're actually going to try to show a short video, a YouTube video. I think Steve's got all set up for us to just kind of walk through that installation and what it means to put an EFV on an existing service line. And again, that our request is to charge customers the cost of that installation on an existing service line. And as we'll note in the presentation, we are already required to and have been installing on new construction or replacement service line. So with that, I'll turn it over to Josh, and we're about to, of course, for questions at any time.
Josh, can you repeat your last name? Is it
Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S.
Okay, that's what I wrote down, but I wasn't sure I heard you right.
Okay. Well, an excess flow valve is a safety device that is designed to automatically stop the flow of gas if an underground pipe is broken or severed. It needs to be noted that an EFE will not stop the flow of gas under normal use or small leak conditions, that it can't tell the difference between whether it's normal use or a small leak. Its main intent is for the broken line or the complete sever.
So, Josh, I'm going to stop you already, and you can tell me that you're going to get to it, but where does the valve go? So can you give us an example?
Again, I will skip way forward in my presentation to... Well, it's a little tough to see here, but at the back of that hole is the main that feeds the neighborhood. And then the small line that you can see coming towards us is the service line. Right at the connection of the main and the service line is the service T that the excess flow valve is connected to. Some manufacturers put the excess flow valve right in the T. We utilize a fitting that goes right onto that T and then to the service line.
What's the approximate cost of the valve itself?
$30.
$30. So the $650 estimate is primarily excavation.
Labor to install and then the excavation. There are several other steps we have to take in the installation process besides just the excavation. We have to retest the service line. We have to go into the house and make sure all the appliances are relit after we take it out of service to install the excess flow valve.
So it stops a leak... How does it actually work in terms of where a leak is on the main line?
Nope, only on the service line. So only between the main and the riser. It won't stop anything beyond the regulator because the flow isn't the regulator at the meter set controls the flow into the house to a lower amount. So it's only the portion from the main to the regulator on the meter set that is protected.
And what does so I'm this is where I haven't figured out what risk it's fixing.
It's the majority of the risk that it solves is unintentional dig-ins to pipelines.
If there's a leak somewhere on that line, it's at the beginning of the line.
This is at the beginning of the
line. So it keeps gas from coming from the main line in and further feeding that leak?
Yes.
Okay.
So essentially, if there's an excess flow going toward that residence, that will trigger the shutoff on the flow valve?
Correct. Yep. If the line is broken,
right,
it'll stop the flow coming from the main and preventing the excavation or whatever the cause between the main or the street and the house.
Mm-hmm.
It'll stop that flow.
And this this was all driven, the new regulation, by, was it Southridge, Virginia, an incident that happened there with one fatality, three injuries?
Correct.
Where they believe this would have mitigated or prevented?
Yes. And they are effective in stopping the flow of gas in those dig-in situations. They are very effective in that, and we see it quite often in our newer subdivisions, especially where there's new fences going in, new trees being planted, other utilities still installing their facilities, where we do get damages on service lines, and excess flows are very effective at shutting the flow of gas off. They do work. It's just that they aren't for every instance of every leak. And that's where some of the issue on existing homes, where the customer needs to know that it isn't for a leak inside of the house or a broken pipe inside of the house. This only protects the section from the main to the regulator at the meter site.
So will it prevent an explosion if something is
struck, say, out in somebody's yard? Will this prevent an explosion, or just will make it less?
It would depend on the circumstance. I don't know if I can answer that, that it would stop an explosion in every instance.
Right.
It will stop the flow of the gas to that, so it should limit the amount of gas available to fuel that explosion.
The ongoing. Yeah,
fire. And there again, now the explosion inside of the house, it likely will not detect that flow, that if it's a leak inside of a house, mm-hmm. that where the majority of our, you know, the industries, incidents come from,
right.
which originate inside the house. This will stop gas when it's an external event, and it will stop that flow of gas to mitigate where that gas will migrate to potentially cause a further explosion.
Mm-hmm. All right.
When you're referencing main lines, is there some definition of that, or is that just anything that is still feeding more than 1 meter?
And correct. Generally, it's any line that feeds more than 2 meters is what we've used in our history, I guess, and I believe that is code language. But anything more than two customers is treated as a main.
And this doesn't do anything on the mains either?
It does nothing to the mains. The reason we're kind of here today is the issued a new regulation that was effective April 14th that required the utility to notify all customers that excess flow valves are available to new and existing customers. We sent that notification out to all customers in the bill stuffer beginning in March and had all customers bills mailed out by the April 14th, so we every customer was notified prior to April 14th, plus the information is still available on our website.
Have you gotten very many inquiries?
We've had a few questions, but zero requests. Hmm. The questions were kind of vague in nature, and this is throughout our five-state territory, not just North Dakota. Since February 12th, 2010, we've been installing, that's when the regulation changed that all new service lines were required to have, residential new service lines were required to have excess flow installed on them. We were actually proactive to that, and we started the process at the end of 08 through 09, and then after the rule change in 10, every new residential service line had been getting an excess flow valve. And currently, all new service lines get excess flow valves, commercial, industrial, depending on load and availability of an excess flow valve. Montana, Dakota proposes to revise its tariffs to charge a customer requesting an AFE to an existing service line the actual cost of that installation. Federal rule does not require the installation of EFE on existing service line, and cost recovery is left to the commission or the Public Service Commission to decide.
When you do repairs on these lines, did you say that you've been adding them?
It depends on the location of the repair. Any replacement service line does get an excess flow of output on it. If the repair is at the service main connection at that T or in the vicinity 3 to 5 feet of that main, we will put an excess flow valve in at the time we're there. Now, if it's up near the house or a customer requests a relocation for excavation or building changes that are on their lot where we're not in the proximity of the main, we have not been installing excess flow valves, just in the replacement or when we're at the proximity of the main. The estimated Cost of the typical installation is approximately $650. Estimates of for cost and time frame for construction will be provided as requested on a case-by-case basis. We want to look at each service line to make sure that we're giving a fair and accurate representation of what those costs will be to the customer so they're informed.
But what would make it go higher? Like, what affects the cost?
Where the main sits in relationship to the house, if it's under concrete or asphalt, the type of main that it is or service it is, if it's plastic or steel, requires different construction processes, landscaping, any of the issues that could be present in a existing landscape type situation. I have some examples. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a high end? Like, what do you think would be the max?
I don't, just because there's too many variables to estimate that without. I probably couldn't give you a fair guess without knowing some details. The photo here is what we based our typical on. It's an established yard, possibly with sprinklers. This one has a few other utilities that we're going to have to excavate around. There is a street light wire there. You can kind of see the yellow lines. The main is about a foot off of the curb there. There's actually two service lines that kind of tie in approximately the same location here. That's what we're basing our 650 on. This is what the excavation looks like to install. It's about a 4x4 excavation that we have to go down on. We have to be able to get a man down in that hole to be able to work on that service line. This installation actually has concrete removal, so we'd be required to replace the concrete in this example. The previous example, of course, we'd have to bring that back to its original state, so getting the sod or the seating or whatever to match the landscape that was there. This is an example of an accessible valve install that would cost more because of the location. You can see the bright yellow spot on the curb. That's a driveway apron curb that is this residence. So the concrete would have to be replaced, the curbing would have to be replaced. The landscaping, of course, the grass install would be similar to a typical. But all of those would drive the cost of this install up above the $650.
Do you generally try and avoid that type of placement? And, of course, I'm under the assumption that the line is running parallel with the street. Would you not move it in a couple of feet?
We would try it at installation with a new install if we know what's going in. Problem is, this house was probably built in 1940 or 50, mm-hmm. and that apron wasn't designed at that time. More than likely, I don't know the history of the residence, of course, so we have no control of what happens after we install the new, but yes, in the new install case.
Widen the driveway after the fact.
Right, we try to avoid putting it under those locations. I think we stated before the cost of the FE is for the plastic EFE itself. You can hand that around if you guys want to see what one looks like. It is only about $30, but the installation of to get a 2-to-3-man crew there to do the excavation, to do the install and the repressure test of the service line, and then to reestablish service within the house is where we come up with our $650.
Is there any benefit to MDU or to other ratepayers for having these installed, beyond just the benefits to the safety benefits to the one customer?
This is mostly for the safety of the one. There is always the possibility of in an excavation damage where we have release of gas that we don't have control of that gas, so we don't know where it could migrate to. So there are instances where gas from a service sever could migrate to a neighboring structure.
And so how this thing works, there's a little valve in here that...
There is. I've got one that I cut apart here. It's a very simple little spring-loaded ball inside of a little metal fixture here. And if you hang with me, I'll try to demonstrate. I'll blow through it. Sound like a whistle. So I don't know if you can hear that. That's typical. And I'll try to get it to trip, but it does take quite a bit. So I may not be able to. So it has to have a lot of flow, and it is it would continue to stay shut off. I can't keep it shut off. I don't have no better power. But the ball that's in there, based on how much flow is going past it, is and that spring that holds that ball in place is how it operates. Once the flow exceeds what that spring will, that is designed for the volume of flow, like this example is a 400 cubic foot flow valve, and they make them in varied sizes so that we can size to the expected load of the house.
What is the life expectancy of, is there any corrosion issues, or do they get gummed up over time? I mean, 20 years from now, is the spring too weak to
There's still fairly new technology. We have not had, I can't say any maintenance issues, but very, very few maintenance issues with any that we've installed since the 2010 timeframe. We did have some that were older vintage than that. Prior to 2010, customers could request and pay for them on new installs. We had a very few of those that went in. But we haven't, like I said, very few maintenance issues. It's expected to last for the relative life of the pipeline. But it is a mechanical device that does have the opportunity for failure. It's just that right now industry hasn't seen that yet.
Yeah, and there's really no way of knowing once it's in place if it is no longer
correct
working.
Unless it stops flowing gas. If the spring is non-operational, that ball will
right
flow with the gas
right
and shut off the service. And then we know that there is an issue.
So if it leaks, if there's a leak on this end towards the customer, that allows a lot more gas to come through. The pressure changes, and then it trips?
It trips, exactly. Yep.
Because the leak allows a lot more pressure,
a lot more flow. Yep.
Cool. Did you play the trombone or trumpet?
I did not. To your question earlier, Montana, Dakota, and North Dakota has approximately 94,000 service lines that currently do not have an excess flow valve. That number is for North Dakota alone. One of the excess flow valve vendors has a YouTube video of how this works, and I'll go ahead and show that now. Set up with a little bit of a bleed by. The way they work to reset themselves is when the pressure equalizes after the repair is done. And the flow, there's a little bit that sneaks by, just a very, very little bit. It will eventually equalize pressure. It will reset the ball that's in this valve.
I was thinking we should have that on really most presentations.
Yeah.
Jazzy music.
Yeah, jazz. And you'll start getting up.
As I showed previously, the typical installation, not a lot of obstacles. That's what the excavation looks like during construction. And then non-typical, to your point, that could change anything from concrete to asphalt. substantial landscaping, water features. We've come across water features, all different types of construction obstacles that could increase the cost of this.
Are you going to charge customers to give them an estimate?
No.
Not even for the service call to get out there and check
it? It was not a plan to. And that kind of, I guess, in summary, installation of Exolus flow valve on the existing service line is a costly solution to avoid that excavation type damage in the event of a gas service line hit. We request approval of a rate schedule allowing the company to charge customers requesting an Exolus flow valve on an existing service line the actual cost of the installation.
So what's your opinion? Is it worth it for customers?
For the retrofit, in my opinion, is not. We have other safety measures in place with the 811 system, called Before You Dig, safe excavating practices that we educate the excavators and the public on. With those measures in place, the severed line issue, it should be resolved. It's not. It's still our primary damage or primary cause of leaks. So we continue to try to educate. And knowing, as a guy in the industry, that this won't prevent that broken pipe inside the house, it wouldn't be of value to me in my own home.
So knowing that the high end can be just about anything, did you say the 650 is what you expect the norm to be, or is that kind of the very low end if
that's
there's
kind of
nothing
the very
much
low
in the
end,
way?
Okay. With not much in the way of that typical install that we showed there where there's hardly any obstacles. That's what it costs us to go to site, to do the excavation, to cut it in and relight the customer. So that's the very basic.
Are you aware of any insurance companies that offer any kind of a discount for homeowners that get this done?
I'm not familiar with any of that. I have not done any research either, though.
Are you going to give neighborhood discounts?
That's a fair question.
That's your idea.
Really big hole. Well, was it dig up the whole neighborhood.
I think you were mentioning, you know, there was a picture where there was two service lines that could potentially be hit by the same hole, so maybe...
Exactly, and that was the instance of, I guess I wasn't thinking of a whole subdivision or a whole, you know, street, but in that instance, on that exact example there, two service lines would be in the same pit, and if both customers were interested, we could definitely split the cost of that. Mm-hmm. That one single excavation for both those customers, so that would be the instance that I was thinking in my mind where we could lessen the cost of that and that we could do a two-for-one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any other, so I mean the excavator example is pretty clear as far as, you know, what this would prevent. Is there any other kind of real-world example where this could prevent something?
Yes, there are other causes that completely sever the line, and the important part is to remember that it has to be prior to getting to the regulator that regulates the pressure at the meter set. So those cases, when a runaway vehicle, you know, we had an instance where a little gal got in a car and accidentally went forward instead of backwards and broke the meter set off. It was below the regulator. In that instance, it would have prevented that flow. Possibly some of the ones through this winter where heavy snow loading caused some meter sets to break, depending on where that break happened, it could possibly stop that flow if it's prior to that regulator. Those are a very minority of our leak causes. So it's not the volume that we're talking about with the excavation damages.
Right. So primarily this is going to stop outside types of breaks and
exactly.
leaks. It's not,
yep.
It's really, there's the nearly no circumstances where it's going to prevent gas from getting into a house for whatever reason.
No. You know, the other system leaks that we have are so small in scale that a lot of times this valve won't detect that extra flow caused by that leak. That leak is so small, there's no real flow changes to that service line. It would be no different than a pilot light burning or something of that nature.
So there isn't one of these on the inside of the regulator box if there's a leak inside.
No.
Don't some regulators have some sort of kind of a pressure differential?
There were some old-style dropout regulators, they were called, that did do this. We are currently in the process of removing those from our system because they were unreliable and at high peak times when furnace and fireplace and water heater were all flowing, you could drop the service to that house, and that could be when the customer's home or not home. And so the reliability factor of those was a concern for us. And it hasn't been, at least what I'm familiar with MDU practice, anything that's been favorable for a lot of number of years.
Since this is on the outside of the meter, if someone chooses to put one in, is that somehow an exception to the norm that it's always their responsibility if it malfunctions? Or since it's on the outside of the meter, once it's in, even at their expense, is it the company's responsibility to maintain or replace it?
Since it's customer installed, it would be our expectation that it be up to them to maintain. But I know that there has been debate on that. Because of that we are installing them on all new, I don't know that we've come to a decision on that fully.
So we're not quite sure. So if they would turn out to be defective for whatever reason, if it's a manufacturer defect, it would be the customer's expense to repair that?
I don't have the answer. I kind of looked across the room here for some support. It hasn't been an issue yet,
right?
I think that our practice has been that we would look at it as fair as possible. Any other defective equipment, we've shouldered the responsibility of that. It'd be my assumption that that's how we would go going forward.
I believe so.
But it just
it's actually our property at that point. Yep. They paid for it, but it's our property to maintain. And
it seems like we need to be pretty clear about that.
Yes.
Because there's not only that cost of repairing or replacing it if it goes bad, but whoever is responsible for that, I suppose if it malfunctions the other way and doesn't do its job, mm-hmm. and something happens and there's a bunch of damage because it didn't trip, then I suppose either the company would have some liability for it if it's the company's responsibility to maintain it.
I believe that would fall under our force majeure. I mean, if it was a equipment failure outside of our control, I mean, that would really, again, we can't ensure 100% flow of gas or ensure every piece of equipment works 100% of the time. So I believe that would fall into that category. But if the piece itself failed, or if there was something that needed to be done because of the particular make or model, I mean, that's I guess that would be us to go back to the manufacturer and us to take care of it for the customer.
Craig, do you have any questions or thoughts on this?
No, I was just listening regarding to upstream of the meter with, you know, mm-hmm. the comments. It seems to me that you would own the facility at that point, so it would be your responsibility, but that's all.
What are the company's plans for Great Plains?
Actually, our plans would be the same, but we failed to file that tariff. So, but our plans are the same, so we'll need to get that tariff sheet submitted for approval.
Is it too late to add it to this one? So we don't have to do two separate?
Well, I think we have a proceeding for Great Plains.
Yep.
Tariffs right now. We could maybe do a
include it in that docket. That would whichever your preference is. I mean, we could submit it tomorrow if need be.
I would say let's run it through that other one.
The other docket.
Makes sense.
We're doing a review of all the tariffs.
Yeah.
And if we still have to do a notice anyway.
Yeah, so we'll get that in.
Craig, are you hearing about this in your circles at all?
Yeah, it's been talked about on the national level, in particular how these are going to be paid for, and it's different state by state. So,
and are the people on your side of it, more the regulators, inspectors, excited about it? Are they thinking that we should be encouraging people to do this? What's the general opinion there?
I think the general consensus, we won't see a lot of retrofits
okay.
because of the expense.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. it's a safety device.
Yep.
Do you have plans for continuing to educate customers, if you will, through bill stuffers in the future periodically that these are available, or?
Right now, it's our intent to send out that same notification annually so that it does. That's how we'll address all new customers also, is that in that annual notification, all customers in a bill stuffer will receive that. Plus, it's on our website, so anytime they're looking, and our website contains any of the educational information that we've sent out.
This is a good piece for us to even think about on. Not on, you know, for any particular company, but just so consumers have access through the Public Service Commission website as well.
Also, are you, like Mark in your shop, going to do any sort of proactive media on it? Just seems like you could get some coverage, general coverage on what these are and that this is a new thing available. And because it does seem to sort of run the fine line of educating and promoting. But I think there's an important education piece, and you can present it like you did to us. Like, this is the benefits in these cases, and it's, you know, you can choose to or not add the final thing on. The other safety measures are more important. But I wonder how many people read bill stuffers. And the fact that you haven't gotten hardly any requests suggests that they aren't looking at that. Or excess flow valves just doesn't register when they see it. And it's like, ugh, complicated. I'm throwing that away. So, anyway.
Continue that. And I think it's important to know it, too. I mean, Josh has noted, but we continue with main replacements. We have an ongoing process of that. And, in fact, we'll be speaking with you more about that as we do those main replacements and those types of projects. Those service lines will be retrofitted, or, you know, the new service lines will have this device on. So it's not only new. I just wanted to repeat that. It's like any time we're replacing that. So eventually that population will get...
Randy did suggest and invite the media to come to this and break into the regularly scheduled programs to broadcast live from our informal today, but nobody showed up, Randy.
I'm surprised. There must be something really big going on out there.
It's been that EFV again.
That actually brings up, so your example of main replacement, how would the cost of those EFVs work in that situation? So let's say you're replacing a main line but no service lines, but you're still going to put in these EFVs all along as that main goes out. What are you going to do with the cost of each of those EFVs to those service lines? Because, I mean, in the two examples before that one, I mean, if I'm hooking up new service, I'm assuming that $30 is included in whatever it costs for me to get hooked up. Mm-hmm. And if I'm requesting after the fact you to come and dig up my yard and put this thing in, I'm being charged for that in addition to the excavation cost. What about you're out there replacing a main line and you're going to put this on my line. Do the rest of the customers pay for their EFV, or are you going to send out a bunch of $30 bills?
No, that would be part of our main replacement. I mean, that would be part of our cost at that point.
Anytime the service, even if the service is going to stay as is, but the main would be replaced, and we have access to both that service and the new main, we would tie it on at that time.
I mean, and I think it's good to do it at that time. It's just, I'm just trying to think about the fairness of people. You know, it's $30, but mm-hmm. the people paying their share of a cost that otherwise they would.
Yeah, I think it's just because it's imperative. If we've got that main, we've got that whole dog. That we get it on and not, you know, even when what I understand, prior to 2009, you know, we were required to offer them for all new service lines. And we had, and so that cost would have been in that
$50
range. And we had very few customers at that time even, you know, want to put those on. I mean, they didn't request it. So
are you keeping the list? Because so if your home was constructed right about the time when it became a requirement, or now as years go by, homes change hands and people don't know whether, you know, it might be a 50-year-old house, but they don't know whether the previous owner had one of these installed Are you keeping track so everybody can find out whether they have one or not?
Every service line that has it mapped, we map every excess flow valve. We have to report it annually for our federal and state reports. So that's how we keep track of them is through our map system. If a customer was interested and inquired on it, we could provide that information. But that wouldn't be something that without the inquiry we'd openly share with them, or it's not a practice as of today anyways.
So in terms of your tariff, the only change is number 11. You just added that paragraph.
Correct. We just added that paragraph to our terms and conditions of service so that it's a reference point for customers and others reading the tariff.
Greg, Victor, Sarah, any more questions from you?
Anything else that you wanted to add?
Nope, that concludes our remarks.
Dave, did you have anything that you, any comments or anything?
A few things,
should I? Yeah.
Please go.
So thanks. Dave Cedarquist with Excel. Thanks for inviting me to this very informing and entertaining hearing. I think MDU did a really great job in presenting and showing how the device worked. A little bit different profile at NSP. We've been installing on all new services since 1999 these EFVs. So for quite a while, I was around, but I didn't know the reasons why. I'm assuming it had to do with the incident in 1998 that just prompted us to, you know, just go ahead and install them. The price is fairly inexpensive, so we went ahead and did that. Let's see, what else can I say? We have about 55,000 natural gas customers in the state of North Dakota. About a third of them, 18,000 or so, already have the valve on. We did a rough estimate, and between 20 and 24,000 customers we think are eligible. Not all customers would be eligible. There are some load limitations and pressure limitations that might make certain situations or customers not eligible for the valve. So we realize we have, you know, probably not quite half the customers don't have the valve. We have had very light response to our website communications around it. And I talked with a gal this morning on the way here to find out how many people have actually asked for it, and she wasn't even aware that anyone had on our system too, which is, you know, several states. So hasn't been too popular from that standpoint. We took a little bit of a different tact on the estimate of the price. So ours is much higher than what MDU is showing, but we kind of took the top end of the range just because we were trying to manage customer expectations a little bit. We didn't want them thinking that it would be less than it might be. I expect that that estimate was kind of done on a full system basis too, so we have a lot of urban, you know, neighborhoods and stuff. So I think it's going to probably end up being lower than that in actuality.
Do we have a tariff filing from you, or are you planning to have one?
No, we felt that our existing tariff language covers this. It's a little broad, but we have a section in our rules and regs, section 5.5, and it talks about, among other things here, the customer will provide for the safekeeping of the company's meters and other facilities and reimburse the company for the cost of any alterations to the company's property necessitated by the customer. Mm. So we kind of thought, since this is a customer request, that we would rely on this tariff language to allow us to charge those customers for the cost to install the EFV on existing services. And we're not really out of the mainstream on that. Our research showed that there are a lot of utilities that have some broad language like that and are taking that approach. Although NSP Wisconsin did file a tariff because they felt that in their tariff book they didn't have anything that was specific enough or close enough. So So, but I think different utilities are doing different things depending on the existing tariffs they have. So.
And what was your estimate to customers that you're using?
Yeah, we were quoting, I think, $1,100 on our website.
But regardless of whether it's $1,100 or $650, that's just an estimate. It all depends on what the conditions demand.
And we say that too on the communication that, you know, it will vary from that.
Are you doing bill stuffers too?
We haven't yet, but what we are looking at is something called an onsert instead of an insert. We have new bills that have a margin on the left. There's room to put promotions or announcements or messages. It's probably a little bit more visible than an insert, which are easy to just toss. The onsert's right on the bill, so if you're looking at the bill, it's not as... So we would think that it would be a little better response, plus it's less expensive to do than putting an insert in. So we're looking at doing an onsert on kind of an annual basis to keep it in front of customers and, you know, new customers or customers that didn't see it in the last time it was out that they might see it in the future. So that's our plan.
Do you know if there will be any public service announcements that any particular organization puts out related to this?
I'm not aware that's in the works. I thought your idea of having something on the website, the PSC website, was a good idea. I know you guys have a section for consumer information. That'd be
perfect
for that. So, but no, other than that, it's in my mind, it seems like it's a little bit of a hard thing because you don't want to create the perception that this is really a necessity. It's expensive.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the risk mitigation is pretty minimal. So you want to make sure that customers understand that before they pay that kind of money for it. So it's not an easy communication.
Why did PHMSA do this then? Josh. All eyes on Josh.
I don't know why PHMSA did it. But it does in that case in 98, it does stop the flow of gas in the service line, which the sooner you can stop the flow of gas, the less likeliness of an explosion. When there is a service line break, it can take 20 minutes up to several hours sometimes to control the flow, depending on what, where and how we stop that flow. So they are a valuable piece that they will stop in those instances, those excavation, those complete line break, sever type instances, they do stop the flow of gas. So they are a very applicable safety equipment for that situation. So they do need to be, I mean, they're proven, they haven't broke down through history. So they are a piece that could stop in those situations. The problem is those situations don't happen on every service line. So I think that's why the awareness needs to be there and that the customer needs to know that they are available, and if they have concerns and it's of a value enough to them to protect their service line, it is an opportunity.
Yeah, and there's a balance between not overselling it, but also saying too little that, you know, some family out there has a terrible accident on their property that kills one of their little kids or something, and then they think, well, why didn't we know about this? You know, I mean, you can't prevent everything, but let them decide.
Anything else? So you presented a handout here today and then the oral testimony. Is there any objection to that being added to the record for our final decision?
No, there's
not. Okay. Is there any other... Then that oral testimony as well as the handout will be added to the record on which we will base a final decision. Are there any other requests for any other filings or... information requests? Okay, we will close this informal hearing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.